Welcome to the podcast today. I am sitting here with Sarah Allred. She actually was the winner of a giveaway that I did in June. I think it was June. Anyone that left a review on the podcast, they were entered into a giveaway to win a chance to be here on the podcast. And it was kind of funny because Sarah, I have actually been working for Sarah for 2 years now. So I know her pretty well and I'm excited to do this. All right.
This was such a cool thing because I feel like you're such a genius in your zone. And I feel grateful I get to bring some of your genius into working together. But I just am especially grateful that the tables are going to turn a little bit and I get to see really your expertise. And like, this is like probably the coolest giveaway I've ever won. And I've won some cool stuff. This is probably one of my fave. Well, there you go.
I'm glad. Hopefully it lives up to your expectations, but I'll get going. All right. Well, Sarah, can you just introduce yourself? Let us know who you are, a bit about your work, and we'll go from there.
Sure. Yeah. My name is Sarah Allred. It's Sarah Grace Allred because I'm named after my grandma who I love so much, who passed away about a month before I was born. So she's always been a close connection for me. My work is centered around helping businesses, both large and small, learn how to market in a better way to female customers specifically. And I also have smaller mastermind groups where we help women start businesses from home and how to do that in an efficient way, in an effective way, help them find meaning and purpose through the things they feel called to do. And it's just been an honor in building that with you for the past couple of years. I am a mom of four. My oldest is 14. My youngest is four, married to the boy down the street who was like an all-state soccer player while I was in the band. Like, we didn't even talk during high school or anything like that, but met after we both served missions and just fell in love pretty quick and just excited to dive into what you've discovered today.
So Sarah, before we get started, I just want to know a bit about your family. Like, were you close to your grandparents, great-grandparents? Did you know them or meet them ever? Or what was a bit about your family
really
life
like? Good question. Yeah, really good question. So I grew up in a very lucky household in the sense that my mother was raised by a historian. So my grandfather is Leonard Arrington, who is actually the very first modern day church historian for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And something that was so incredible about his efforts there as a church historian was that he loved to focus on the people in the shadows of church history. He was one of the first people to ever publish a book about female pioneers. It was called Sunbonnet Sisters. He co-authored it with my mom. And he just wanted to know the stories about the quote unquote ordinary people. And because he just felt like the stories of the prominent church leadership were already being told, and he loved to bring to the forefront the stories of those who were not seen at that time. Mm-hmm. And I think that his work has impacted the growth of women in the church and the stories that we tell. And I'm so grateful for his boldness. He was very much before his time in really bringing those stories of the ordinary individual to light. And so that was how I was raised, was to find extraordinary stories about the ordinary. Now, very honestly, when it comes to actually family history work, I have probably spent less than 10 hours of my life on genealogy. but I have spent thousands of hours sitting around the dinner table, listening to my mom's stories and compiling photographs and knowing some things about my ancestry. But I could not go in and go into family search or anything like that and feel any level of comfort in any way, because I don't really know how it functions. But I do feel very connected to the stories that I was brought up with around the dinner table. And so I'm so grateful for that heritage that I had. As far as how close I was, I was close to my grandpa Leonard, who was the church historian. But like I mentioned in my intro, my grandma Grace, who I'm named after, died a month before I was born. And so that was obviously not a connection I was able to experience here on earth, but I do feel that she's there and love learning about her and her world. My grandparents on my other side lived very far away, and this was before the days of FaceTime and even email. and they passed away before that ever came to the forefront. So I don't know a lot about my maiden name side, my Madsen side. You call that paternal? Is that what it's called? My dad's?
Yeah.
My dad's side. I know much more about my maternal ancestry than I do my paternal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, we are going to dive into your paternal line. So that's what you wanted to know about your second great grandparents. And so I'm just going to get my screen here. All right. So here is your second great grandfather, Mads Madsen. Now, for those that are listening or watching, you can watch these slides on YouTube if you watch the podcast there. And for those of you that aren't aware of how, so Mads Madsen, he was from Denmark. I'm sure you're aware of that, Sarah. And so
someone came from there.
Yes. And so the naming systems in Denmark are like patronymics is what it's called. So the sons, their last name would be like son of Mads. So Mads' father, his name was also Mads. So Madsen was his last name. And then Mads' wife, Ellen, her last name was Hans' daughter. So the daughter of Hans, right? So it's a different system. When they came to the United States, that kind of changed. They stuck with Madsen. They didn't keep that tradition going on. Okay, so here's Mads Madsen. I'm not sure what age he is in this picture, but I think it's quite a neat picture of him.
Really
cool. So he was born in Svinning, Denmark, in July of 1830. And there's the map there. It's near Copenhagen, just a bit west of Copenhagen on the island there in Denmark. Okay, so he was the oldest of seven children, born to Lars Madsen and Bodil Niels' daughter. All of the children were born on their family homestead near Svinning, and that homestead had been in their family for generations. So here's Mads' christening record. You can see that he was born on July 20th, 1830, and then christened, you see this, 25th of July, 1830. So he was just 5 days old when he was christened at the church. That was near where they lived.
Incredible.
And then here is Mads at age three. If you see down here, Mads Larsen, age three. So he was living with his parents, Lars Madsen, and Bodil Niels' daughter. And that just reminds me. So he was actually Larsen when he, and then at some point he changed his last name to Madsen. So when he came on the ship over to the United States, his name was Mads Larsen. And at some point he changed it to Madsen. I'm not sure when that happened, but because patronymically, because his father's name was Lars, he should have been like, he was Mads Larsen here, right? And at some point he added the Madsen to his last name.
The last name of Larsen?
You could have. Yeah. If he decided to keep that.
Right.
Yeah. So he is living here with his parents, Lars Madsen and Bodil Niels' daughter. And then here is Anne Niels' daughter. So I had someone translate what this said here, just to see, you know, how they were all related. And this Anne Niels' daughter was actually his stepmother. So Lars's mother died when he was five. So his father remarried and married Anne Niels' daughter a few months later. So Lars was probably primarily raised by this Anne. Because after he was five, she was her stepmother. So they were living together, and Anne was listed as the farm owner, and then Lars Madsen was listed as the manager of the farm. So he ran the farm, lived with his stepmother, with his family. So here they are, Lars and Bodil, with their two sons, Mads, and then Niels Peter Larsen. Age two.
And silly question, is there any connection in between Anne Niels' daughter and Bodil Niels' daughter?
Not that I know of. So they just, both of their fathers would have been named Niels.
Would have been named Niels. Crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can see how the naming system, it can get quite confused.
Yeah. Because like, who thought that was a good idea?
I know. Probably why it didn't last super long. Yeah. So that was their family in 1834 in the census there in Denmark. All right. Then this is the church that their family would have attended, that Mads would have been christened in. It was built in 1100 AD. So like it had been there for generations. Their family would have attended this church in Svinning. I'm not even sure if I'm saying that right. Svinning. I don't know. Denmark names. But then in 1853, the LDS missionaries came to Denmark and they taught Mads's family. The entire family was baptized in 1854. And then in November of 1855, most of Mads's siblings left for Denmark to go to Utah. Mads, his parents, and his youngest brother stayed to kind of get the family farm ready to sell. And then Mads's parents left the following, probably the spring of, that would have been 1856. Okay, so what do you think of this whole process? Like they got baptized and then their family started leaving Denmark. What do you think it would have been like for this family to leave their home in Denmark where their family had lived for generations to embark on this journey to Utah? Like, what do they even know about Utah? Probably not very much at all. But what do you think that would have taken for this family to make that leap?
Gosh, what a foundation of faith and trust, for sure. And it does make me so sad for, is it Lars that lost his mother at age 5?
Yeah.
And I just think how much loss he experienced. Mm-hmm. He experienced it at the age of 5 and got kind of a new mom. Have no idea what that dynamic was or would have been like. But then, you know, as he grew older and it must have been, you know, I guess he was christened in 1830. So then all of a sudden he's at these older ages. And again, another source of loss of my homeland and the church I grew up in and all of those kinds of things that when I see those kinds of stories of faith, I just think you had to have just believed. You know, there was nothing fake about that belief, that it must have been so real and so right to give up past traditions and you know, those sacred churches that you grew up in and those memories that you have there, that I just think, wow, so much loss in such a quick period of time that they must have believed.
Well, they had to have. Like, how could you make that sort of sacrifice to leave everything you know for something completely unknown? Okay, So Mads's father, Mads's parents, and his youngest brother left for Utah that following spring, and Mads stayed in Denmark. But I just want to read this excerpt of a history that was on Family Search written by the granddaughter of Mads Madsen. Okay, so she's talking about her great-grandparents, Mads's parents, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so late in August 1856, so this is after they have come to the United States, they're on their way to Utah. Late in August 1856, with an ox team company under the command of Captain William B. Hodgett, they had started their journey west through wild and unsettled country. Two handcart companies, the James G. Willie and Edward Martin, had left for the Salt Lake Valley in July. October 9th, the Hodgett Company passed by the west side of Fort Laramie and passed the Martin Company near Deer Creek. Their food supply had run low. Their carts were falling to pieces. It was a pathetic sight as many of the weary aged men and women and even children drew their carts along the side of the Hodgett Company wagons. October 19th, they joined the Willie Handcart Company near the Platte River. They had used their last flour. The next morning, the ground was covered with snow, and it was so deep, it prevented the companies from traveling. It was very cold and frosty. Many of the oxen had died, and the others were very weak and poor. In order to lighten the loads, bedding had even been discarded. There were many deaths from exhaustion, cold, and lack of food. They passed the Fort Bridger Platte and camped at the fording place on the Platte River. The next day, they began to ford the river, a distance of about 8 rods. Not sure how long that is. slipping sometimes off the smooth stones, shoulder deep into the water. Many were weak and timid, but getting into the rope harness and into the icy cold water waist deep, they crossed the river. After a bite to eat and some hot tea to drink, they traveled up the river and along the North Platte near Red Buttes and on to Devil's Gate, Wyoming, where they were snowbound. They arrived at Devil's Gate about November 1st. There were about 1,200 persons in all, one half with handcarts and the others with ox teams. Their goods and all belongings were unloaded, and they started out again with bare necessities. November 2nd, the snow fell heavy and deep, the wind blowing and drifting. It became extremely cold, sometimes getting as low as 11 degrees below zero. On November 3rd, they were forced to camp again, as it was impossible to move on. Several men were sent to Salt Lake to report and get counsel and help. Owing to the continued cold weather, the companies were compelled to remain here for several days. For days, the sun was not seen at all, and the cold was intense. It was while remaining here, suffering from cold and exposure with rations reduced to less than half required, that Mads's father, Lars Madsen, who had been a strong and sturdy man, after a few days of suffering at the age of 62 years, passed into the great beyond, leaving his mother and brother, Christian. Sorry. To continue the journey alone. His father, Lars, was buried at Devil's Gate at the head of the Sweetwater and near Warren's Ravine. Many others died at this time. They too were laid away as best they could under the conditions. So Mads's mother, Bodil, and youngest brother, Christian, they were in one of the rescue teams taken to Salt Lake after that point. So how do you feel hearing that story? This would have been your great-great-grandfather, who was otherwise a strong and sturdy man, and after those conditions of, lack of food, lack of warmth, passed away at that point in Wyoming, almost to the Salt Lake Valley.
It brings up a couple of things for me. Number one, again, just the immense loss for faith, mm-hmm. the immense loss in their lives because of their faith. And man, there must have been something to that faith, right? Mm-hmm. To have put everything on the line to live that faith. And the other part is actually so fascinating because my mother, so my maternal side, does not have any pioneer ancestry. Right? We were all tobacco farmers in the South, right? Is what you would have found out. So kind of opposite, right? All tobacco farmers in North Carolina. And what's so interesting is that my mother, who is, you know, the product of tobacco farmers in the South and Baptists, she is an author for Deseret Book and writes books about pioneers. She writes the books about children crossing the oceans, right, from Denmark and all this stuff. And she wrote the book, I Walk to Zion, which is all stories about young people that cross the plains and their experiences. And I'm just really struck in this moment that this was not her heritage. This was, she could not point to that great-grandfather as an example of faith, but she still, they are like family to us. And family to her. And she used to dream and wake up in the middle of the night and would have visions in her backyard. There were, like, out in the field, there were covered wagons circled up and there was a fire in the middle. And they just were so part of our lives. And I'm kind of astonished in this moment of remembering that these are not my mom's ancestors. She married in to this kind of ancestry, but these were my father's ancestors. And so I think that it really gives permission to allow these stories in. What even though you're hearing about my great-great-grandfather or whatever it is, great-great-great, whatever, but even though that's what you're hearing from maybe my heritage, that if you don't have that in your heritage, it can still be a legacy, can still be a lesson to you. And I'm shocked because I have been to Wyoming because of my mother. And seen these sites probably half a dozen times. And I have walked those in pioneer clothes as part of a youth trek. I've done all those things. And I've actually seen, I want to say it was Hans, but maybe it's Mads, as a, they have his name on a plaque of all the people that were in the companies. But I did not know that that is where Lars was buried. I have been to Devil's Gate a half a dozen times, and I had no idea that that was where he laid. And so I'm very touched that I've been there, and I kind of want to go back now. You should come with me to just know where his story ended. So close. So close to what he was reaching for, but what a legacy he's given for me personally.
Yeah. 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 That's a powerful story for sure. Okay. So Mads remained, he stayed in Denmark to complete the selling of his family's farm and property. And then he left Denmark alone in April of 1857, the last of his family to come to Utah. Not sure if he knew about his father's passing at that time or not, but he was 26 years old, and he sailed on the ship, the Westmoreland. So this is...
Oh, cool.
Someone put this in Family Search, so I'll give them credit for finding that picture. I'm not sure if it's accurate or not, but that's maybe the picture of the ship that he sailed on to the United States. So then meanwhile, Ellen Hansdotter, or Hansen, when she came to the United States, was born December 23rd, 1837 in Munkbjergby, Denmark. So it was just about 30 kilometers south of where Mads was born. There were five girls and two boys in her family, and they were farmers. They were Lutheran, along with most of Denmark, they were Lutheran. And after hearing the gospel from the LDS missionaries, she and her mother were baptized in 1856, and she was 19. In April 1857, Ellen left alone with other LDS saints on the ship, the Westmoreland, to go to Utah. So I don't know if you knew. I don't know if you know these stories or not, Sarah.
No, this is new to me.
So they were both traveling by themselves on the same ship to Utah. So they...
The same trip.
They stayed in the same company all the way to Utah. So it is, I mean, we don't have record of their courtship or anything, but we can assume that's where their relationship started, right? Okay. So they walked, it said that the young people in their company walked the entire way to Utah from, I guess, wherever they started in, like, Iowa. Okay. So that would have been Ellen and Mads likely walked that whole way. They arrived in Salt Lake City on September 13th, 1857, 6 months after leaving Denmark. They stayed a short time in Salt Lake and then were called to go up to Brigham City to settle there. We assume that there must have been romance on the sea and on the plains between Ellen and Mads, because they were married shortly after in Brigham City in October of 1857, so about a month after they arrived. And then they were later sealed in the Endowment House in Salt Lake in November 1861.
Okay.
So then in 1858, Brigham Young asked Mads and Ellen to colonize Sand Peak County, Utah. So that's more south in Utah, right?
Yes.
So they moved to Fort Ephraim, and then in March 1859, they went to Mount Pleasant with the first settlers of that area. So this was their home in Mount Pleasant, their farm.
I've never seen that photo.
Yeah. Well, it's on Family Search if you want to take a look.
I'll log in first. Okay. You think I run an online business, I could probably
I'm sure you can talk after. So at first they settled across the Sandpitch River on the west side of the valley, and then later they moved farther northeast where they established their home and farm. And supposedly their home still stands. There was this image in families. Well, someone put in an address for where their home was, and this was the address that pulls up. So I'm not entirely sure if that's the same home. I mean, it looks like it could maybe, but the roof line is a little different, so I don't know. But maybe it's that property. Who knows?
Okay.
But What do you think? So this would have been quite the journey for Mads and Ellen. They arrive in Salt Lake, then they are called to Brigham City, which is north of Salt Lake. Then they go down to San Pete County there. What do you think that would have felt like for them for that whole journey to finally settle, have their own land, and kind of begin their life together there?
It's like a love conquers all kind of story to me, because I think the worst thing in the world is moving, right? I have moved a lot in my marriage, and I'm like, you just have to love somebody, and then moving's not as bad. So the boat part is my favorite. I'd never made that connection of where they had probably met and courted, and I'm a romantic that way. That just really excites me. But I imagine that they both were just ready to build their own life, you know, to have that hunger for stability, that hunger for land and growth and cultivating. I think that desire is in all of us. And I can't imagine they were any different in that desire to just, okay, can we settle and just build here and face challenges here together? And that's incredible to see what they were able to build.
Right. Yeah. So here is, by 1860, they were in Mount Pleasant, has settled in their home there. And here they are in the census there. So you can see, I mean, it says Mass Mason. So whoever wrote it down didn't write it down quite right. But there's Mads and Ellen. And then Lars is their oldest. He was 1 year old. And these numbers here, there's 350 and 400. So 350 was the value of their real estate, and 400 was the value of their personal estate. So real estate is like their land, the things that are stuck there, right? And then their personal is their property, clothing, furniture, cash, livestock, those sorts of things. So they seem to be pretty well off compared to the other households in that area.
And why would that be?
Not sure. They might have, maybe from selling the farm in Denmark, maybe they had saved some money to come over. I'm not sure. But they seem to be doing okay. And they had their own farm and property there.
That's a great start for a new couple with a one-year-old.
Right. Yes. So here, 10 years later, in the 1870 census, you can see their family has multiplied. So here they are with six of their eight children that were born by then. So we have Mads and Ellen, and then Lars, and then Hans, that's your great-grandfather. And then Mads, Tomina, I think was this one, Josephine, and Andrew. And then we see another woman here, Dorothea, who is 37 years old. Do you know anything about her?
No. Do I want to?
No. I don't know.
Just kidding. Don't need to be afraid of the truth, right?
Yes. So in 1863, so 7 years before this, Mads married Dorothea, as was instructed by many of the LDS members at the time, to marry more than one wife. Okay, so this was his second wife, Dorothea. And at this time, they had two children, ages 6 and 4, but they had also had two other children that had lived only a few months as babies. And Dorothy was pregnant with their fifth child at this time. So polygamous relationships at the time were common. So it's hard to know, like with our perspective today, it's hard to know how these women would have felt about it, right? But here is an excerpt written by one of Mads and Ellen's grandchildren in their history. And can you read that? Can you see that well enough?
Yeah, it says, after some years, grandfather married a second wife, and it has always been an inspiration to me when I think of the confidence and respect these two women had for each other. No ill feeling was ever manifested in any way, and the two families grew up in love and harmony together. The children's affection for each other as brothers and sisters lasted throughout the years. As grandchildren, we always called the second wife Aunt Grandma. Each had their own home across the street, or rather city-cornered from each other. However, the greater responsibility in general affairs and all the big jobs of making things and carrying on the everyday work of the farm rested upon grandmother. She never complained, but was always kind and gracious.
Yeah. So here's the two pictures of them. So here's Ellen, and Dorothea. So here's the two wives of Mads. So Ellen's your second great-grandmother, and then Dorothea was Mads' second wife. I'm curious, what do you think? It sounds like they had a good relationship, at least from the perspective of a granddaughter, right? But why do you think that was the case? Like, why do you think they would have gotten along?
Well, I imagine, I think polygamy is incredibly complicated, right? Mm-hmm. And it's really, really hard to put it in a lens that makes sense for us in the year 2023, at the time we're mm-hmm. recording this. I imagine, though, that continued desire to build upon faith and unity, especially for a family that had experienced so much loss, that they were willing to pay certain prices for that faith and for that unity. And I do appreciate the journal entry. I can't imagine it was perfect from a 2023 lens, right? I can't imagine it was always total harmony, just like our own homes mm-hmm. without polygamy are not mm-hmm. total harmony all the time. But I imagine that there was unity in where they were headed and where mm-hmm. they were going, and that had to be the constant mm-hmm. in what those efforts were. And tell you what, on the other side, those are going to be some of the questions I'll want to ask, is how they did that and what that was like and yeah. what kind of meaning they found in it. Mm-hmm. But I admire the desire to work towards something together.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. We can't really understand what it would have been like, but having that common goal would have helped kind of smooth over any of those hardships, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So then in 1872, so if...
Can I ask yes. a question? Sorry.
Yes.
In a polygamy relationship like that, what would I call Dorothea? Do I call her a great-great-grandmother as well? Or how does that... What is she in relation to me?
In relation to you? Well, she's kind of a step great-great-grandmother, I guess. Because you descend from the first wife. And so, yeah, it would be a step great-great-grandmother.
Okay. Good answer.
So then if you remember, Ellen and her mother were the only ones that joined the church. I think her father died shortly afterwards. But in 1872, Ellen's mother, Kristen Nielsen, she immigrated to America on her own and lived with her daughter in Mount Pleasant just over a little over a year, because she became ill and died in 1874. And then Mads Madsen, he died at the age of 65 when he and Ellen's youngest child was 16. Ellen cared for their children and they for her after her husband's death. And her youngest son, Christian, and his wife, Sarah, moved into the old home, remodeled it, and raised their family there. Ellen made her home with the second family until her death in 1923 at the age of 86. So, yeah, so that is what I had to share with you today with Ellen and Mads and a bit of their journey and their family experience. But what are you feeling as you are learning a bit more about your second great grandparents and their family and their journey to the United States and all that went with that?
Oh, I think people are more alike than they are different, regardless of generations. And mm-hmm. so just humanizing them in the sense of, you know, a lot of moving, a lot of loss, a lot of faith, a lot of trying to harmonize a family. Like, those are threads of things I battle with and that I am trying to grow and understand. And I think that it just reminds me that, like, there are people before you that have done this mm-hmm. and that understand this from, you know, hundreds of years ago that are cheering, that can give you help for that and stuff. So I guess I'm just feeling just more connected in the sense that 2023 is not that different from 1857 in mm-hmm. in most aspects, right? Mm-hmm. In most aspects. And so I just loved hearing, I think you extracted just some really fantastic elements of their life that are timeless in mm-hmm. the struggles that we face now. And so I'm just really grateful that I can feel more connected and call upon that help and perspective as I put a name to it through mm-hmm. through those people that you helped me discover.
Yeah. Yeah, I think whenever I learn about different people and different people's families, like just seeing the humanity of everyone, like we all have our trials, we all have our hardships, we all have our joys. Like there's all that whole experience is very universal, I feel. So I'm glad that I was able to share that with you today and share a bit more about your family with you.
Totally priceless. Thank you so much for your efforts. It's been an awesome, awesome experience.
Yeah. So Sarah, if people want to connect with you, what is the best way to do that?
Probably find, great question. Find me on Instagram. It's just my handle is Sarah with an H, Grace Live, L-I-V-E. You can send me a message in there, but who you really should be connected with is Megan. So here we are. But she's the one with the skill set. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Sarah, for being here, and we'll see you guys later. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast today. I would love it if you could go to iTunes to leave a rating and review. That really helps more people to be able to find the podcast. Since we're so new, we need all the help that we can get. So share about it on Instagram, leave those reviews, and we will see you next time.